Remember recess? It was that refreshing break between classes that cleared the cobwebs, refreshed the mind, got everyone moving. The new book, Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today, is an illustrated guide to the best games of the playground for inside and outside. The guide includes the rules to over 150 games and variations, including over 24 international games from schoolyards around the world, plus various tips and strategies, not just how to play, but also how to win. Ben Applebaum and Dan DeSorbo have co-authored this book, as well as many other humorous pop culture books. Ben is a writer and creative director and joins us this morning to talk recess. Ben Applebaum, thank you very much for being with us. Welcome to the roundtable.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You are co-author with this book along with Dan DeSorbo. What brought the two of you down this path?
Well, we've actually co-written a few books before, and a lot of them were more young adult books about drinking games and other lighthearted things, but we're also both now fathers. And we started thinking about what other topics we could tackle, because we like that element of play. And we initially started this talking about there's a resurgence of adults playing games like kickball. There's national Foursquare leagues. But as we started diving in, we realized we could actually start to categorize and talk about recess games for people of all ages. And that was inspiration. And it really opened up into a bigger project when we learned about the need for more recess and its benefits.
When you started to compile the classic games, is there really anything out of, I mean, a lot of these just started out in the playground, out in the streets. So when you started to compile them, what was your source of legitimizing them, for want of a better term?
We looked at other published accounts of the games, but so much of this, like you said, has started on playgrounds. Some of it dates back to ancient Egypt. Different games have very, very long histories. Some are much more recent. And the legitimization was a good question. It was really about there's not always one way to play a game. So one of the approaches was, let's talk to several people, let's do research, let's see if we can find a gameplay that can best capture the essence of the sport. But with each game, we talk about all the different variations and different ways that people put spins on it. So we wanted to find a version of each game that was the most accessible and easy to play, so we can encourage people to really embrace it. But we didn't want to turn our backs on the fact that these games have fun, interesting histories, and people in regions and different backgrounds have always put their own spin on it.
The book is basically divided into several sections, including homeroom, which is basically just sort of the basic rules, and then hand games, dexterity and mental games, jumping and rope games, ball games, and contact sports. And so let us begin with some of the hand games, because I assume that these are mostly the ones that happens when it's raining outside.
That was the beauty of a lot of these, is when you're raining outside. We also remember playing a lot of these when we were in line waiting to go to recess.
Right.
Classic thumb wrestling, clapping games. One of my favorites was is classic hand slaps, which was always a great way with the two players. One has to slap the other hand, the other one has to remove their hand, and it was just such a perfect distillation. You had offense, defense, you had just enough pain to make it interesting. It's really the basic essence of sport without any equipment, without any pretense, just really essential games that you can play anywhere.
What is finger jousting?
Finger jousting was a relatively new game that we found. Imagine thumb wrestling, but with your index fingers and a bit more wrestling and kind of full body contact in a fun way, but that was more recent, and we found an organization of people that are actually really passionate about this, and we talked to one of the founders that's actually trying to make this more of a legitimate game. So that's an example of one of the newer games. A lot of these have such long histories, but they're still coming up. Even with the day of mobile apps and video games on screens, people are still finding new ways to play in such a simple, fun way.
We then move on to the dexterity and mental games, and you work on things that are classics, of course, paper football and marbles and jacks and tic-tac-toe. What is cootie catcher?
That's a game where you fold a piece of paper up into this origami shape that some people would call it a fortune reader, and based on numbers and colors and different permutations that can predict your future or who you're going to marry or all this other fun kind of lighthearted prognostication that happens on the playground.
Okay, so I've seen that a million times, but I had never heard it called a cootie catcher. So is that in some ways difficult in what you were doing? Because I assume there are probably many different variations of these games and different names and so forth.
It made it difficult, and it also made it fun. So one challenge was to make sure, are we looking at this a bit like Darwin and the Finches? Are we looking at a different species or a different name for the same game? So once we kind of isolated, well, this is the basic gameplay. We found games like, we called it Under Butt Ball, which is a game with a racquetball that you throw against a wall, and then as part of a foul, one of the players has to receive a ball thrown in their hindquarters. That had at least two dozen names. Some of the games that aren't so popular, like Dodgeball, a lot of them had a lot of variations, and I really do think people thought that they invented the game in their childhood and weren't aware of its history or that it had different forms all over the place. So naming was both a challenge but also fun when we found people saying, oh, yeah, I remember that, but we called it this.
I'm assuming that most of these games, before we move on to some of the others, I'm assuming that most of these games are sanctioned in some way or another that you can play during recess without getting in trouble.
That was a big criteria for us. There are games that some people like a Bloody Knuckles that if you've ever played, you know that would not be sanctioned in many recess rules. So we want to make sure that we were games that were appropriate for the playground. But we did talk about games that have more contact and more physicality than are currently in favor with a lot of schools. So we wanted to make sure those didn't get lost, but we definitely drew the line at things that were just too rough and tumble, or also anything that would encourage bullying. We have a little section about there's a difference between competition and then across the line to bullying, and we never want to condone that, crossing that line. But there's something great about good old-fashioned physical competition.
Right, without getting hurt.
Exactly.
Which there's always going to be. I mean, that's part of recess too, though, right? There's always one kid who's going to get hurt.
Yeah, we talked about the fact that, especially within the helicopter parenting of today, it's okay to get a few bumps and scratches. We never want to do anything that would go further and have permanent injury. But a scuffed knee or a little rope burn from tug of war. All that stuff is really part of childhood, and it's okay for bumps and bruises, in our opinion.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you before is when we were talking about the names of the games, did you run into an issue of political correctness in any of the names?
We did. Some of them terms that would associate foreign differences were used, so whether it's Indian or other words that we just wouldn't use today. So we did find a lot of things have evolved and changed, but some games, Chinese Jump Rope is actually a game that has a Chinese history to it, and at first we thought maybe that's one of those words that people would have used just to connote that it was foreign and different and they were less sensitive, but it's actually has a rich history in Chinese culture. So we made sure that we looked carefully at the etymology of them.
That brings us to jumping and rope games, and you mentioned one of them, Chinese Jump Rope, and then there's Double Dutch and Jump Rope and Tug of War. And are some of these, did you see them also as gender games, that one would be more played by girls than boys and vice versa?
We did. We noticed that. At least in the U.S., clapping games and some of the jump rope games were more played by girls, and other games had a more boy side to it, but that would change in different cultures. So in some cultures, both genders played clapping games a lot more. So it was interesting how it changed, and also how things have evolved over the years. Some were really started off as boy games, but now are embraced by everyone.
I do want to talk about the ball games Foursquare, and then kickball, wiffle ball, stickball, stoop ball, handball, butt ball, pat ball, tetherball, and the all important and ever famous horse. A lot of great ball games. And so what was it like putting this chapter together? Because once you get a couple of kids and a ball, there's all kinds of things you can do.
Yeah, that was one of the things that Dan and I joked about, that it's really all the permutations that if you put a bunch of kids together with a spherical object, they're going to have a lot of fun. This section was fun. There was challenge in the fact that we wanted to capture enough of the rules to make them playable, but you can get into so many bylaws of a wiffle ball or stickball game that it could get a little opaque. So we tried to list them out and with enough, again, to encourage play, but not get so caught up in it all. And then some things, we had a great time exploring tetherball. I have a classic from a bygone era. It's kind of fallen out of favor recently, but it started off as an actual adult game that was a high-speed tennis-like game with a smaller ball and a racket. And then the manufacturers wanted to get kids started earlier, so they put a softer playground ball on it. And through that, the adults stopped playing, and then it became a kids' game. And then as kids stopped playing it, it's now... I think it's a relic on recess grounds that some kids have no idea what this pole embedded in the concrete is even for.
And that brings up the subject of some of the, did you find games that you remember or that were told to you that simply just aren't played anymore that have kind of gone by the wayside?
We definitely found, like I said before, a lot of the higher contact sports have become a lot less popular. So a Red Rover in our contact sports section, a lot of people can remember being clotheslined in their childhood as they try to break the line of other kids. A lot of them aren't played anymore. A lot of kids still understood them, but games that even predated my childhood and Dan's childhood, we didn't even know how big marbles was for previous generations, and it really, their sports games like that really had a huge cultural impact, and it really combined competition and collection, and people were trading the marbles, and we didn't know how big it was for previous generations, and that kind of obsession with all the different marbles has kind of, you can see some of that now in the collectibles and the online currencies that kids play in their digital games. You can see those roots in the analog version of games like marbles and jacks, where people, and even the markers for hopscotch, the potsies in the New York area, where people would find just the right marker and would covet it and trade it, and that kind of offline currency. You can see it today being replaced with a lot of the online games, but some of those older ones were really bigger cultural influences than they are today.
And the final ones you write about are the contact sports, and as you say, some of the more extreme contact sports have gone by the wayside, but there are still games that involve contact that are around and alive and well.
Yeah, tag being one of the oldest ones, and you can even see basically animals playing tag when scientists have studied play and how it's even in the youth of all species, and just the idea of having somebody who's chasing another complete classics. We loved the wrestling games, even though leg wrestling has fallen a little bit out of favor. Some of those rough and tumble yet still safe games, from arm wrestling to one-legged hand wrestling, a lot of those were really fun to research, and you know, we hope kids of all ages can find a soft piece of grass and have some fun again.
Well, the name of the book is Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. And again, the book is Recess. And I assume you feel that when you look at these games that probably generations down the line will still be playing these, video games or not, or whatever new gadget there is that the kids are playing with instead.
We really hope so, and when we look at schools are reducing the amount of recess and they're getting rid of playgrounds, we hope that in our own little way, just by preserving and celebrating these recess games, that people will play more again. We know it has an incredible impact on kids' development, mentally, socially, physically. We know adults can benefit from playing again. So hopefully in future generations, even if they read the online version of the book, they're going out there in the playground and having fun again.
Well, the name of the book is Recess, From Dodgeball to Double Dutch, Classic Games for Players of Today. Ben Applebaum and Dan DeSorbo are the authors of the book. Ben, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Recess. It is published by Chronicle. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.